is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Linsing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight, Jay, we are jumping on to do a little NBA Christmas preview when the average casual NBA fan joins the rest of us who have been following the league right from the beginning of training camp and all throughout the year. Seems like the casual NBA fan jumps in on Christmas. So we wanted to hit on these Christmas Day games, just give our thoughts in terms of which ones we're most excited about, which ones we're least excited about, and then just talk briefly about some of the storylines that go along with those games. So I'll let you tip it off by giving me your game that you are most looking forward to on Christmas Day.
Definitely the Clippers versus the Lakers. A rematch of the first game of the season. Obviously, I'm just intrigued by this game. I was intrigued by this game like 3 weeks ago, but now with the Lakers losing three in a row, I'm even more intrigued. And is LeBron going to play? I'm assuming he's definitely playing, and I'm assuming Anthony Davis is definitely playing. I'm assuming everyone's playing. Trust me, the NBA would have probably going have a conniption if one of those guys is out for load management. So I'm looking forward to that game. It's perfect in the 8 o'clock slot because that means my kids will be in bed and I'll actually be able to watch the whole thing. So I'm all about that game right there.
I think I'm actually looking forward to Bucks Sixers more than Lakers Clippers.
I'm not sure
why. Yeah. Both teams being out on the West Coast, I just don't feel like I know those teams as well.
Wait a second, you don't know the Lakers? They basically are
the best player
you've ever witnessed.
I'm more excited about the Bucks Sixers game.
Okay,
I think to me those two teams are still. I'm still not sure what to make. I don't know. It sounds silly, but I'm just not sure what to make of either of those teams.
Did you see the tweet Kevin O'Connor put out about Ben Simmons?
Oh yeah, baby. That was a pretty big that dug pretty deep at Simmons, just saying that he's got to figure things out or he's going to, but it's true. I mean, I think that's one of the things that is so interesting about Philly is what is Simmons come playoff time with that team. I mean, you go back to last year and he became, I don't know if you'd completely call him a liability, but he certainly wasn't very much of an asset in that Toronto series. And there's nothing that's changed. He hasn't developed the ability to shoot. He's not really playing any different. And, you know, I think it's possible that he can be played off the floor when you get to the playoffs. And that's a difficult situation for Philly to be in, where clearly their, at worst, second best player becomes a liability. And it's just interesting. It goes to something that we've talked about numerous times, is what's the long-term fit for Simmons and Embiid, and do they make sense? Because the reality is that Simmons should almost be playing in a Milwaukee Bucks Giannis style
of offense where Simmons has the ball. They're flying up and down the court. He's surrounded by four guys who can all shoot so that his shooting's not as big of a liability. And you're playing at a super fast pace to take care, you know, to take advantage of the things that he does well. And that's just never going to happen on Philly with Embiid there. So the only time Simmons gets to play that way is when Embiid is on the bench. And is that really the best way to utilize those two guys? And so at some point, I guess this year is going to be a really a telltale year for what happens with Philly in the playoffs, what happens long term with Simmons and Embiid. If they end up losing to somebody in the second round again and Simmons kind of gets compromised, I think they're going to have to look long and hard at do they trade Simmons, and maybe you get 75 cents on the dollar in terms of talent back, but maybe you get a guy who fits better, or maybe you get a couple pieces that you can put around Embiid that make more sense. It's going to be interesting to see.
I have a question, Mike, and you can tell me if this doesn't make sense or not. What would you say to a Ben Simmons for Drew Holiday swap?
I think Philly's got to get more. I think Philly's going to say we have to get more for a guy who's a borderline all NBA player who's 20, whatever Simmons is, 23 years old, 24 years old. I don't think you can trade Simmons for as good as Holiday is, and I think he's 29 maybe or 30. You know, he still could have some very, very productive years, but he also I think would fit pretty well, but just from a pure talent, upside, age, youth, I think Philly would say okay. No. I think New Orleans would do that in a second. But I don't think Philly would say no there.
Fair. So that would be my second game, by the way, and I'm assuming your second game is going to be the Laker Clipper game, right?
Correct. Yeah, correct. For sure. So I'm just looking at one of the things that I'm fascinated by Milwaukee. I continue to become more and more fascinated by them every single day as they just keep winning and annihilating people. And I know I've said it on the last couple podcasts that I look at their supporting cast beyond Giannis, and I don't think that they have the second guy who's as good as a lot of these other teams, like I've been saying for weeks now. But I do think that they have a lot of guys that they can roll out that are very, very good. And then I don't know if you read the article on The Ringer today.
I did not go to The Ringer today.
So the article is called Milwaukee is so bucking good it might make history. So it just talked about the best per game point differentials in NBA history. So the list of the top 10 teams is basically every historic team in the history of the NBA. So you have the 33 win in a row, 71-72 Lakers. You have Kareem and Oscar Robertson Bucks. You have the 72-win Bulls, you have the 73-win Warriors, you have a couple other iterations of the Warriors and the Bulls, you have one Spurs team, but basically...
You have the 2019 Cavs on that list, Mike?
The 2019 Cavs are not on the list. This is not the worst point differential, this is the best point differential. Oh, so the Bucks currently right now have a point differential of 13.48, and then in second place is the 71-72 Jerry West... Will Chamberlain, 33 game in a row winning streak, Lakers, and they were at 12.28, which is the best over the course of the season. So right now the Bucks have the best ever point differential in the NBA. And so then the article just went into talking about some of the reasons why that is and whether or not they would be able to keep it up. Talked about how Giannis, compared to other guys in the league, you know, stars, is playing less minutes because they just keep killing people, and so he's getting rest.
I'm pretty sure there was stretch they won three games in a row by like 40 points, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's getting a huge rest compared to, you know, all these other guys who are stars who basically are carrying their teams or, you know, putting a lot of minutes out there. And it was a very, very interesting article about Milwaukee. But then the caveat is that all this stuff is based on regular season stats. And at certain points last year, they were at almost this same position. I don't think they ever got up to where they are now in terms of being at like 13.5 points a game. I think they were right around 12 last year, yeah. Somewhere in there. So they had a historic, I mean, they were right there with the best teams in history last year in terms of point differential. And, you know, they're right back there at the top and ahead of it now. But it still comes down to what are they going to look like in the playoffs? And can they sustain what they do in the regular season? Can they sustain that in the playoffs? And so I just continue to be fascinated by watching them, observing them, seeing what they do well. They're so stingy in the paint. They just don't let people get in there with the Lopez brothers and Giannis just wreaking havoc defensively inside the lane and making it tough for teams to get in there. And then, you know, the offense that they have fits what Giannis is trying to do. And then you incorporate the fact that he's shooting threes, and it's just, they're just beastly. So I'll be curious to see what they do with Philly on Christmas Day. To me, that's the game that if I could only watch one game, that's the one I would pick. Clippers-Lakers is a close second, especially since, you know, the opening night matchup, Paul George wasn't there. And now you've got both of these teams basically at pretty much full strength. And that should be a very entertaining game. I think that's a matchup where what is Paul George and Kawhi, what can they do with LeBron? How do they match up? How do the Clippers match up with Anthony Davis? I think is going to be an interesting way of looking at it. And then who do the Lakers throw at Kawhi and Paul George, and how much time can LeBron spend defensively on one of those two guys without wearing down and having it compromise his offense over the course of a game? And that's something that if those two teams meet in a series, I think to me those two things are going to be the key, is one, how do the Clippers guard Davis, who guards him, and then two, can LeBron spend time on Kawhi and Paul George, or does that compromise his offense, or do the Lakers figure out something else to do within their scheme that LeBron doesn't have to spend a lot of time on those guys so that he can focus on the offensive end of the floor? So I don't know what you're looking for in that game or what things you find.
I just want to see good basketball. I want to see a play. I mean, I know it's going to be a playoff atmosphere, they would assume. I mean, pretty much, I won't say every Christmas Day game, because just looking at two of the games on this slate, they're not going to be playoff atmospheres. But I think that it'll be a playoff atmosphere. I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm just glad that I can be able to watch that game. Like I said before, the likelihood that I'm going to watch any of the games before the Lakers-Clippers is probably pretty low, just because I know what we've got going on with family and stuff, but I'm going to try to watch as much as I can, just kind of keep informed. But I definitely want to see your points to how are they going to guard George and Kawhi, and how are they going to stop Anthony Davis. I think it's really going to be kind of intriguing to watch and just see. Obviously, this is the second time they're playing. I think they probably have at least one more matchup. I don't know. They might even have two more before the season's out. And kind of it's one of those like feel you out kind of games. And it'd just be kind of interesting to see what the strategies they use from the first games, or if everything's just completely different because Paul George is now playing. So those are the things I'm looking for. And I guess to your point about the Milwaukee Philly game, I think the thing that I'm most interested about in the Philadelphia game is, like, how long until Ben Simmons shoots a three-pointer in that game? I want to see. Will he shoot a three, Mike? I'm going to guess the answer is probably no.
Yeah, I would say no.
I think what I'm interested in is kind of, Embiid has been kind of up and down this year, not consistent, and I'm more and more thinking, you know, I know I said it to you last year, and you, I don't think you completely bought into. I think Embiid's success completely drives whether Philly's going to be good or not, because when he plays well, they seem to succeed. When he plays terribly, they seem to lose. And I know you probably could say the same thing for Simmons, but I feel like the Philadelphia's won some games that Ben Simmons has played terrible in this year, whereas I can't really think of, I mean, obviously I can't perfectly think of any games that – Embiid has played terrible. Like that game, the one that's sticking out like a sore thumb is that game that he went like 0-13 from the field and they lost. Now, granted, I think if Ben Simmons went 0-13 from the field, they probably would lose too. But I just think every single time Embiid has a bad game, Philly doesn't play well. But anytime that Embiid has a good game, they have a chance to win. And
well, we talked about it last year, the on-off stats in the playoff series last year against Toronto, and how basically they were plus whatever when Embiid was playing, and then they were minus 100 in the short amount of time in those minutes that he sat. And I think that was one of the things that Philly really wanted to try to fix this year. That was probably the main reason why they signed Al Horford, was so that they could have somebody competent filling that slot when Embiid went to sit. And I don't have the on-off numbers in front of me here to know how successful that's been, but certainly that's something that they're concerned about. And I think that it's sort of been proven out over the last year and a half that as Embiid goes, so goes the Sixers. And yet I still think that their ceiling is more dependent on Simmons than it is on Embiid. Because I think Embiid, despite his inconsistencies, despite the fact that, you know, Shaq and Barkley want him to come out and produce every night, which I think is true, and I still think that his, I don't know, maturity, I'm not sure how you go about attacking that, but I think he's got to be in better shape. I think he's got to bring it every single night. And at this point, he's not quite there yet. And Simmons himself is still a little bit of an enigma. It's weird that the guy won't shoot, and yet you look at the numbers that he's putting up. He's averaging, you know, over 8 assists a game. He's averaging over 2 steals a game. He's been really, really good defensively. I mean, he's everything that you could want if, you know, again, I've said it before, but if you put Ben Simmons back in 1982, I mean, he's Magic Johnson. You know, I mean, Magic came into the game, you know, into the pro game without much of a jump shot, sort of a freak of nature at his size to play the point. And Simmons is a very similar player to what, you know, to what Magic was. And so, but in today's game, you got to be able to shoot or else teams just don't guard you. And then it just puts one more guy in the way of everybody else who's trying to score. So I agree with you. I do think that probably Embiid drives their night-to-night success. But I think if they're going to get to where they want to go, which is winning a championship with these guys, I think Simmons has to – he's got to figure out something to do offensively. And I don't even mean in the regular season. I think that's ultimately going to come down to, in the playoffs, what can Philly do to take advantage of the things that he does well and have his liabilities – be hidden. And I don't know what that is, other than him just getting better at shooting the ball from outside of 8 feet and him being willing to take those shots so that at least defenses have to somewhat account for him. Right now they don't have to account for him anywhere except for right in front of the basket, and that's tough.
I mean, I saw I don't remember what game they were, this was like 2 nights ago or something, they were literally, the person guarding him was standing inside the key and he was at the three-point line. Like, they weren't even —
yeah, why would you? I mean, the only disadvantage to that is you give him a long runway to build up speed, and, you know, then he can change direction and maybe get around you. But as far as taking away his shot, I mean, the guy doesn't want to shoot anything but layups. So why would you go out? Why would you go out and guard him anywhere past 10 or 12 feet? It doesn't make any sense. So yeah,
I agree.
That's something that Philly's going to have to reckon with, and I'm sure that Milwaukee's going to do a little bit of that tomorrow. And when Milwaukee already packs the paint with just tremendous size and good athletes, now if they can take one more guy that they can sag off of and put another help defender in the lane, it's going to make it even tougher for the Sixers to score. So it'll be that to me is a fun game. It's a fun matchup. Clippers and Lakers is a very, very close second. I think that game's going to be entertaining too.
I think we're going to agree on the third one.
Yeah, I'm not sure which of those games I'm going to get to see more of, depending on my Christmas Day schedule with family and traveling. I'm guessing I'm going to have a better shot at seeing more of the Sixers Bucks game live than I will see in the Lakers Clippers game live. But
no.
We'll see.
I guess you have older kids, so
yeah. So we'll see. My kids will probably still be awake and doing who knows what. So hopefully I can catch some of that game, but we'll have to see.
Yeah. So my third most anticipated game, and this really isn't even a contest because the other two games are what Bill Simmons would call a poopfecta. I'm going to take Celtics Raptors. I'm just intrigued because the Raptors are just playing good basketball, and even with all these injuries, they came back the other night from a 30-point deficit, right? Was 30 points? Was that?
Yes.
Lowry, right?
Lowry, yeah.
He had a really good game. And and it's not the playoffs. And I know that last year he kind of, you know, and he had the help of Kawhi debunking the playoff Kyle Lowry thing. But I'm just interested to see how they match up without their big guys playing. And the fact that they're still, you know, third or fourth spot in the East, and I don't know off the top of my head, I'm not looking at the standings right now, but they're right there.
Toronto's fourth. They're 21-9. Philly's 22-10. Miami's 22-8. So those three teams are basically.
And what are the Celtics right now?
Celtics are 20-7. So, you know, everybody's within.
Everyone's right there. So everyone's, I'm just right kind of interested to see how that game plays out. And I don't know that it has any, like we can't take a lot from it, considering the Raptors are going to be minus three of their key players. But I think it'll just be interesting to see how they handle that, and how will Van Vliet and Lowry play on Wednesday. Your guess is as good as mine. But I mean, I would pick the Celtics to probably win that game. But I think that it's just kind of interesting to watch them play, the Raptors play without it. And I have to give it to the Celtics. They're playing better than I thought, and I'm really excited for more Taco Fall. That's what I want. Give me more.
You saw him conducting the orchestra.
I
right?
sent them to you. That's what I said. I sent that to you.
I like that one. And then you saw the chants for him.
Yeah. Well, did you see last night when he grabbed the ball? It was clearly a goaltend.
Yeah, I did.
And then the next possession, the offense, what he did on offense, that was pretty. And someone posted a thing of him doing the game before Hakeem Olajuwon or Taco Fall, and he was basically doing the dream shake. Except instead of fading away to the basket, fading towards the basket.
Got it. That's funny. But yeah, that's funny. But this game, I mean, I'm marginally interested in it.
You're more interested in the other two games, Mike.
Yeah, I'm more interested in it than I am in the other two games. Although I have to say that, like, in this game, like, there's really, I don't know, like. Okay, let's go each team. Is there anybody on Toronto that you're like, man, I really like to watch this guy play? Is there anybody? Especially with the lineup, with the guys they have now. Is there anybody on that team that you're like, man,
if Siakam was healthy, he would be about it, right?
And even him, I'm not excited. I'm not necessarily very excited to watch Pascal Siakam. So there's nobody on Toronto that I am like, ooh, man, I really like watching him play. So I have no interest really in the Raptors, to be honest with you. Then if we go with the Celtics, I don't know. I just have a bias against the Celtics for whatever reason. Never liked the Celtics. Continue not to like the Celtics. There's nobody on the Celtics that I would say I'm a huge fan of. And that's not to say they don't have good players, because obviously they do. But there's nobody that jumps off their roster that I'm like, oh, man, must-see TV. I've got to get out and watch Jason Tatum play. Or, man, I've got to see Kemba Walker.
Would say Kemba. I like Kemba a lot. I liked him in college. He's about the only thing that for the Celtics. I mean, I do think anytime that Taco gets in the game is pretty exciting.
So. Yeah, I'm just not. I don't know. There's just even though I agree this game is the third best game of the day, I'm not. To me, it's not must see TV. I'm not going to be.
Well, it's also at noon.
Right. I'm not going to be trying to rearrange my schedule so that I can catch the majority of this game, because there's not any one player in this game that I'm like, oh, I got to catch them when they're playing. So I don't know, third best game, but I'm still not that interested in this particular game.
All right. Fourth best game. Yeah.
Oof.
All right. I'll let you pick what you think the fourth best game is before.
Okay.
I
so, I mean, I think the fourth best game is Denver, New Orleans. And
I agree.
To be honest, for me, I almost think that I could almost bump that one into being the third most, maybe not the third best game, but the game that I might be the most likely to tune into and try to watch. Because there's at least
very high likelihood I'll see that game.
Yeah, I agree. But at least there's some intriguing guys that, like, I love watching Jokic play when he's at his best. And on New Orleans, just because there's still some unknowns about Brandon Ingram and
he's Lonzo. Playing pretty good tonight.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's still some intrigue about what New Orleans is. And I like watching Denver. I like watching Jokic. So I might actually, because of the time, I'm sure I'm going to watch more of that Denver-New Orleans game than I am Boston-Toronto. And I might actually be more interested. It's very, very close. I know Boston-Toronto is a good game, but or is a better game. But I might actually be more interested in watching New Orleans-Denver just because of the individual players who are in that game compared to the individual players that are in the Boston-Toronto series or game. So,
yeah, I would say that's my fourth game, too. I mean, we're probably going to beat a dead horse here in a minute, so as to why we're not picking the other game.
What?
But
come on.
But I think the fourth, I will watch some of this game. I will not watch all of that game because I will likely go to bed. It'll be a long day as it is. Yeah. I might watch
maybe
the first
Zion's
half.
Coming. Maybe Zion's coming back.
There's a 0% chance of that happening. So
is he going? Are they going to shut him down for the whole year?
I think that would be the smart thing to do. I mean,
do you really?
The season's lost, right?
Yeah, but I mean, if the guy doesn't play for a whole year like that, I mean, I know Simmons did it. I know it's been done before. I know Embiid sat out a couple
Blake
seasons.
Blake Griffin did it.
But I don't know, man. If he sits out the whole year, that to me is a bad sign. If he's healthy, you got to get out there and play. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't sit him. And if I was him, I wouldn't want to sit. If the doctors say I'm 100% healthy, there's no way if I can come back for the last 30 games of the year and the doctors tell me I'm healthy, there's no way that I want to shut that thing down when I'm, you know, you got to remember the guy's, you know, 19 years old. Like, does he really want to sit out for an entire year and not play any basketball? I find that hard to believe.
Yeah. Listen, I'm not disagreeing with you. I just think the season's lost. You got to protect the future. The last thing you want is him to come out there. Now, granted, if he doesn't play in the NBA game, he's just going to go play pickup. I understand that. Like,
right,
I'm just saying
if he's healthy. I mean, I'm not saying that if he's at 98% that you roll him out there. I'm saying if he's 100% healthy and he's been cleared, and I don't know. If it was me, that I'd want to play, and I would be upset if I got shut down for a year just because I was injured, but now I'm not injured.
Or I'd be really
anymore.
Upset if I'm a New Orleans Pelican fan and bought season tickets thinking I was going to get to watch him play basketball, and here we are.
Or you're the NBA and you have the New Orleans Pelicans on every single national TV schedule that there is.
Oof.
It's been – I'm sure the ratings for Pelicans games have not been as good as they predicted.
Let me just say they're the exact same situation as the Cleveland Browns. Like, seriously, if you think about it, except – it's over spread out over an 82-game schedule instead of a 16-game schedule.
I don't even want to – off the air, I got a Browns take for you. I'm not going to share it. I don't want to go into it on the podcast, but we'll have to talk about
Freddy
it.
Freddy Soup Kitchens?
Oh, my God. Well, not only that, but there was just some hilarious Tony Romo announcing that just was mocking the whole entire Browns organization.
Oh, yeah,
that we could talk about.
I laughed.
It was classic. But anyway, all right, the worst game of the day. I don't know.
Do we really need to talk about it? Can we just like pretend it doesn't exist?
Well, I don't know. Okay, let's just say this. I don't know if I could name five guys on Golden State's roster, number one. Number two.
D'Angelo Russell.
Wait, stop. Let's do this. I was going to do this with the back end of the Raptors, but let's do it for the Warriors. I think it'll be fun. Let's see.
Are you going to pull up a roster?
Yeah, I'm gonna pull up a roster. Okay. Actually, you know what? You might be able to do better. It might have been harder on the Raptors, but let's try it anyway. Okay. We're gonna give you some initials, first initial, last name, and you're gonna try to name the player for the Golden State Warriors. Okay.
Okay.
All right. This guy's a shooting guard for the Golden State Warriors, Jay Evans.
Jeremy.
All right, good try. Jacob. All right, so you're 0-1. All right, let's see. Next guy. This guy's a point guard. Kay Bowman.
I know this one. I heard this guy. It's not Kevin, but it starts like K-E something. I don't remember.
All right. His name is Kai Bowman. K-Y. All right, next one. Shooting guard, D. Lee.
It's Damian Lee.
All right, good work. And probably I would guess you would know all the rest. I don't think there's anybody in there. Jay Poole.
It's not Jordan, is it?
Yeah, Jordan Poole. All right. So I think you would know everybody else. Kay Looney.
Kevin. He was on the championship team.
Spellman.
Omari.
All right. So you would know. Then you got, yeah, you would know. You'll know everybody else. So it's not quite as bad. You know, the roster's not a completely unknown group of guys. But at any rate, I have no desire to watch Golden State other than maybe I take some demented pleasure in them losing and being at the bottom of the barrel. And then we've covered the Houston Rockets ad nauseum. Although it's been interesting with the Rockets lately that Westbrook has really been playing much, much better. And it seems like maybe they're kind of starting to find their way of those two guys playing together. So, which could be an interesting development if they can really figure out how to maximize each other and they can be able to.
I'm going
to
go with no chance in hell, Alex, for 500.
Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree with you. And I don't need to say it again, but they have been playing better and Westbrook has looked much better over the last week to 10 days than he has previously. And so who knows, but yeah, I don't care about this game. Although just based on the time, I'm guessing I'm probably going to watch a fairly significant amount. It's either watch this game or sit at a table with my relatives who are, you know, my wife's family relatives. And I probably am not going to do that. So I'd prefer to sit with my daughter and my father-in-law and watch NBA games. So
here's a question. Here's a question. If the NBA can flex this game out, would they? This is like Sunday Night Football.
I read somewhere today. I think it was on Twitter. I read somewhere today where someone suggested, hey, why don't they have flexible scheduling where a team has to earn their way onto Christmas Day? You know, why don't we have a schedule where the Christmas Day games aren't decided until, you know, a week or two beforehand, and you just say, okay, this is the matchup we want, and then we're going to move that game from wherever it's scheduled in April. We're going to put it on Christmas Day and then just kind of finagle the schedule around. It's kind of an interesting concept. I mean, I don't think it'll ever happen, but an interesting concept nonetheless.
Well, maybe this middle of the season tournament thing that they're talking about, the championship game will be on Christmas Day. I don't know.
That'd be, I mean, in theory, if you could somehow, and I still don't know how you develop interest in that, but if somehow you did develop interest in it, and you put that on Christmas Day, that could potentially be entertaining, but I still think it's going to be a hard sell. Like we talked about, I don't know, a podcast or two ago. I don't know what that's going to look like and how they're going to get teams.
Well, they said they're going to give players $1 million each. That's what the report was the other day. That the NBA is talking about making each player that wins would get some $1 million. Now for Superstar A and B, $1 million is chump change, but for the rest of the roster, I mean, $1 million is $1 million, right? I mean, that's not
insignificant money to players 7 through 12 on your roster or players 7 through 15 on your roster. That's significant money. But I just think that extrinsic motivation wears off. It's not like Michael Jordan didn't try to win titles because he was going to get an extra, you know, paycheck that year. He was winning titles because there was a legacy associated with it. It was meaningful. It was an intrinsic motivation. And I just think when you start attaching these artificial incentives to this stuff, I just don't know if that drives the type of passion that you're going to need in order to sell this to the public. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes as the NBA continues to work through the details of what that all is going to look like. But I still have a hard time buying in that people, and by people I mean all the different groups that are going to have to be involved in it, from the players to the teams themselves to the fans. I don't know. I just don't see it being successful. I think they're much better off. I think the play-in tournament is something that could have a lot more value than the midseason tournament in my mind. Because at least the play-in tournament ends with an incentive that every player wants, which is the ability to go compete in the playoffs at the highest level. So I think that has more likelihood of success than does the midseason tournament.
All right. Anything else on the Christmas Day games, or should we do some quick hits on NBA stuff going around the league?
Yeah, let's do some quick hits. I'm looking forward to the Christmas Day slate for sure. It's going to be fun to see a couple of those games. I think Milwaukee, Philly, and Clippers, Lakers are going to be fun. And so hopefully I'll get to see most, if not all, of both of those games if I can swing it and make it work, or even if I have to tape it and watch the Lakers-Clippers game later on. I might end up doing that too. So I'm looking forward to those games.
All right, so the first thing I want to talk about happened over 2 days ago, I think, or 3 days ago. Isaiah Thomas going into the stands. So obviously this is the first time, at least I can think of, Mike, that someone has gone into the stands following the Malice in the Palace. Is there anything in between that you can think of, or no?
No, I mean, not anybody going into the stands. Obviously we had the Russell Westbrook, Utah Jazz fan incident last year.
Or Rodney Hood.
There's been some, right, the Rodney Hood knocking the cell phone out. And you had some fan-player interactions that have been where the player is where they're supposed to be and where the fan is where they're supposed to be, which still are not good instances and weren't a good look for anybody, you know, either party involved in either of those incidents. But this is the first time that I can remember of a player going up into the stands. And I think it speaks to a couple things. I think it speaks to the fact that, one, we now have a culture with social media and the internet where people I think are used to hiding, are used to saying things that they don't have to stand behind. They don't have to say it face to face to someone. And I almost think that the stands is becoming the same thing, where fans almost think there's like this invisible barrier between them and the players, and that they can shout things through the barrier that are offensive and that are unnecessary, and that the players are just going to take that, or should just take it. And don't get me wrong, like, I'm all for fans being able to heckle players and boo and do things, but the people who are the most successful heckling fans are people who are humorous and creative and those kinds of things, and are
not
constantly
calling people
Right. I mean, not using foul language, not saying things about a player's family, not using racial slurs, not taunting. There was an incident with Kyle Lowry actually in tonight's game. I don't know if you saw any of it. I didn't look at all the details, but it sounded like somebody was saying something to Lowry in the Indiana crowd. And I didn't get a chance before we jumped on to really look at it that deeply, but so I think there might have been something else that went on there. So it's a disturbing trend that you don't want to see happen. It's not a good look for anybody. But I understand the player's frustration that these people buy a ticket and then think that it gives them the right to say and do whatever they want. And I just think if you're a player, people forget that those guys are human beings. We watch them so much on TV. You see them, you know, whether it's in press conferences or you see them out on the court, you hear them talking on ESPN or on a podcast or on the radio, or, you know, they're being interviewed in the post-game press conference. And so you kind of forget that there are actual human beings under there that have feelings and are living their life. And I can't imagine going to a game and getting to the level where you're talking about a player using profane language and, you know, insulting them. I get booing. I get rooting against players. I get hoping that they play poorly out on the floor. I don't get where it gets into you getting personal with them. And I understand where the players are coming from. Now, that doesn't mean that Isaiah Thomas was right for going in the stands, but I think at some point when you're a player and you're like, hey, nobody is handling this, and this guy just keeps talking to me, that I might need to take those matters into my own hands and go and have a conversation with the guy. And that's what he decided to do. So I don't know.
Here's what happened. Multiple fans courtside tell me that fans shouted "Stop whining" at Kyle Lowry, who then reacted. Pacers players heard it as well. Lowry did not discuss it post game. The fan was interviewed, then returned to his seat. Building security has reviewed the tape. So supposedly all he was saying was "Stop whining," which, if Kyle Lowry is going to react to that, we got to You've got to meet me halfway. You got to meet there halfway. That's not a good look for Kyle Lowry.
That's not a good look. That's not a good look for Kyle Lowry. If that's all that was said, that goes to my point. Like, I'm all for heckling a player. I'm all for, if you're a home crowd, that you should be trying to distract the players who are on the other team with clean heckling. And to me, saying quit whining does not cross the line in any way where a player should have the right to be going to officials or going to talk to that fan individually. I mean, that's something that you just got to take and turn the other cheek and keep playing. If you're hearing that, that's not a good look for Kyle Lowry. And then, again, if that's really the story, and we don't know for sure.
Yeah, we don't know for sure. I'm sure stuff will come out in the next few days.
Hopefully, but we won't see. I mean, it's not something we want to see. You don't want to see players and fans having those kind of interactions. It's not good for the game. It's not a good look for anybody.
Because, like, when you look at like what happened with Isaiah Thomas, I mean, the fan was just upset because he didn't get a Frosty. Now, those were the words that he told Isaiah Thomas was, "Oh, I was just mad at you because if you missed two in a row, I was going to get a Frosty." Dude, how much does a Frosty cost? Like $1.50? Come on.
I think it's on the 99-cent dollar menu if you get a junior Frosty.
Jesus. I mean, come on now. It's ridiculous. Don't get that upset. Like, it's ridiculous.
You may need to get a life if you're that upset at an NBA player because he doesn't get you a Frosty. So, it may be time to reevaluate your priorities in life.
Are you okay with a 2-game suspension for him?
I just don't think you can let a player go into the stands.
I agree.
I know that I understand where Isaiah Thomas was coming from. I can understand the frustration, like I said earlier, that if somebody's doing something and you don't feel like it's being taken care of or addressed, that you need to address it. But there's just too many things that can go wrong when you go up in the stands. There's just, you know, I know nothing really went haywire in this case, but you think back to the Malice at the Palace and fans in the stand or players in the stands. You just never know with the amount of people that are A, crazy, and B, drinking when they go to a game. It's not a good combination for
success. Yep.
Yeah, for something good happening. And I think we were all lucky that nothing went on beyond the two of them exchanging words in a conversation. And thank goodness that's all that happened. But I just think if you're the league, you have to send a message that, hey, there's other avenues that we can go down to deal with problems like this. We can't have you in the stands. And so I think 2 games seems fair. One would have been like a slap on the wrist. 2 makes it seem a little bit more serious. And since it never really escalated beyond that, I think going more than 2 games probably would have been excessive. But I think 2 games sends the proper message that, hey, players, we don't want you in the stands. And hopefully the NBA is going to continue to address fan behavior, because I'm sure if we were to talk to NBA players, especially if we were to talk to them off the record, I think a lot of them would probably say that this stuff's becoming more common. Because like I said, I think people are used to hiding behind things and saying whatever they want with the idea that, hey, we're anonymous, or that those words can't be associated with us. And I still think that there's something to that about what people do and say at a game.
Yeah, I would definitely say too, there's definitely a history. I mean, certain places, I mean, like the one that I think of right away is, I've always heard that things happen in Boston. Between the Fenway Park crowd and I've been at Fenway. I've never been at a basketball game there, but you know, I've always heard some not so nice things. And no, I'm not trying to judge the Boston fans or anything, but that's what I've heard and it's been chronicled. You know, I know that it's been chronicled in Fenway and in New York State, the Yankee Stadium. I've heard stuff too, but who knows what's going on around the league, but I definitely think they need to keep an eye on it and make sure it's better. I will say, like, you think about when LeBron came back the first time that he played. I mean, I think that was probably the worst it's been in Cleveland, and I don't even think it was nearly as bad as what certain situations are going around in the league.
Yeah, I think that, again, I'm all for booing a guy who comes back if you feel like he left unceremoniously. Boo him all you want. Root against him. cheer against him. But it's one thing to cheer against the player. It's another thing to dehumanize the actual human being and to use foul language and to call people names or to insult their family or do things like that. Just there's no place in society anywhere for that, let alone inside a sports arena. So hopefully, I mean, you're never going to completely clear it up because people are who people are, but I think the NBA will hopefully continue to crack down on that, keep a close eye on it. They certainly don't want any more incidents like the malice at the Palace, and they don't want players in the stands is the bottom line. And so they're going to do what it takes to make sure that that doesn't happen. I mean, it's sort of amazing when you consider, you know, those courtside seats and just, you know, if somebody wanted to basically run down from anywhere in the stands onto the floor, you know, I'm sort of amazed that it doesn't happen more often, that a fan, you know, we're talking here about a player going in the stands, but I'm kind of honestly surprised that there isn't more incidences of, you know, a fan trying to get their way onto the court. Maybe it happens and security.
It happens at baseball and football games.
Right.
Not as much in basketball games.
Right. But basketball is just so, you know, everything's so close. It's so intimate. I'm surprised it doesn't happen more.
Hey, well, it happened in 2014 when that fan ran out of the stadium and gave LeBron the flyer that said, "We want you back."
Yeah.
And then he came back. It worked. See? Yeah. More people should try that tactic.
Let's not endorse that.
Disclaimer,
Jason's words are only his own. They do not represent the views of Mike or the Hoopheads podcast.
I was being sarcastic.
Yeah, I understand.
All right, so speaking of the Cavs, let's talk. A big trade happened today, Mike. Jordan Clarkson, he loves to shoot, is going to be shooting his shots in Utah. And the Cavs get back Dante Exum. And 2 second-round picks, I believe, San Antonio and something else. You know, good for Jordan Clarkson. He's on a team that's going to be good. We'll see if that helps Utah or if Jordan Clarkson shrinks in the moment like he did in 2018. But I think, you know, I think it's good for him. I think it's good for the Cavs financially. I don't know if Dante Exum is. He's basically been nothing what they hoped he was going to be. Maybe he just needs a change in scenery. This helps us. I think I sent you a tweet. I think it got us from $1 million under the cap to like almost $6 million under the cap, or the luxury tax. Which obviously we're not going to be in the playoffs, even though we've won 3 in a row. I definitely think that this was a money move. At the same time, we got some picks that maybe we can parlay into something else in the future. Who knows what they're going to do with it. But the first move has been made, Mike.
Yeah, I think from the Jazz standpoint, they had really – it's one of those cases where they had soured on Exum. I think they – you know, he was a number 5 pick in the draft, so there was huge expectations for what he was going to be. And – it never really materialized. The knee injury clearly hurt him, but he still, even before that, he never got to the level where people thought that he was going to get to. He never really developed as an offensive player. Has had some moments defensively. He's had a few moments offensively, but generally speaking, I think he's underachieved his draft stock. And so Utah, I just don't think, had a need for him anymore. And the one thing that we know Clarkson can do is score. And so if you look at Utah's roster, you look at the things that they've struggled with in the past in the playoffs, we talked about it, where Donovan Mitchell was basically their only guy who can create a shot. And they're more diversified this year offensively with Bogdanovich there. You know, he gives them another guy that can create. But Clarkson is one more guy who can, I mean, he can definitely get his own shot. He can definitely create offense. The question with him is always, how does he fit into the team concept? And maybe he goes and gets under the tutelage of Quinn Snyder and his offense and the cuts and ball movement and passing that they're known for. And it doesn't seem like he would fit in. He hasn't shown any inclination during the time that he's been here that he's interested at all in passing the ball. But who knows? Maybe you get in a different system, you get with a different coach, you get with some teammates who are trying to get you to buy in. You have a chance to be successful, get into the playoffs, maybe make a deep playoff run. Maybe there's some kind of change in Clarkson, again, as he continues to mature and get older. So if I'm Utah, I'm still not sure what the value of those second-round picks are. I know teams around the league value them more highly than I would for some reason. But from the Cavs' perspective, you're getting a guy in Exum who still has some potential. I don't know. I think you're clearing off more space for, again, who knows what. But I think in the immediately, I'm not sure it makes them significantly better or worse. I think it is what it is. I think
it makes us worse, Mike.
Yeah, I would probably agree with you, because to me, Exum, he's not the same level of scorer that Clarkson is, and I don't know what he brings that is going to help us to win games. He's not a difference maker. Not that Clarkson was either, but Clarkson's offense occasionally could swing a game.
Well, like the other night. I mean, he scored 33 points and we won the game. I think they saw him score 33 points and they're like, we got to get him out of here. We got to stop winning.
And that could be true. I mean, he's averaging almost 15 a game this year. So can he score? Absolutely. And in the playoffs, that's where Utah's struggled. So I think that they got to be looking at it from a standpoint of, okay, when we get to the playoffs, how can we help Donovan Mitchell to ease his scoring burden? And Clarkson does that. And if you think that you can get him to buy into your system and move the ball and still be able to bring the things that are his strengths, which is scoring the basketball, then good trade for Utah. I think it's a fine trade for the Cavs. Like you said, save some money under the salary cap, get a couple of second-round picks that either you use those picks or you trade them for something else. And I think, as we said before we jumped on the podcast, this is the first domino to fall. It really is. I think that I'll be very, very surprised if come the February trading deadline that Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson are still on this roster. I think
who's more likely to be on the roster? I think Kevin Love, right?
Man, I don't know. I mean, it seems like, just based on everything that I read and hear, you hear a lot more talk about Love, because Love is the bigger name. Love is probably the better all-around player. He's clearly the better offensive player. And so I think that you hear a lot more about Love, and yet I think Tristan is less expensive. And depending on which Tristan you're getting, you know, he could be a very, very valuable piece for a team that needs somebody who has his skill set. Now, I don't know. I haven't gone through every roster to know which team might fit best for Tristan. But certainly, because of his versatility defensively, if you're getting the best of Tristan Thompson, the guy who played in the 2016 finals, who was just a menace on the offensive boards, a guy who could switch onto just about any position on the floor defensively, if you're getting that guy, then that's a guy that every contender would want to have on their team. Whether Tristan ends up being a starter on some team or he's the sixth, seventh man off the bench, he's a valuable piece, and he's cheaper. He's probably $10 million, $11 million cheaper than Kevin Love. So I don't know. I don't know which guy. If I had to vote, I would honestly say I think Tristan is more likely to be on the roster, because I think Love helps us win more games. Tristan is more valuable as a role player on a good team. On this team that's so bad, he's not the difference maker at the same level that Kevin Love is. So I think they're going to really try to get Love out of here. And I still don't know what they're going to get for him or where he's going to go, but I think the haul is probably going to be, when we ultimately see what that trade is, I think that as Cavs fans, we're probably going to be disappointed in what we get back, is my guess. I think we're going to think we should have got more.
All right. I mean, I don't know. We'll see what happens. Like I said, Clarkson's contract was expiring. This was a money dump. We got some stuff back. I don't know if we really could have gotten anything more for him.
I think you did really well, because to me, I wouldn't if I'm a winning team, I don't want Jordan Clarkson on my roster.
Because he I just don't loves I just to shoot.
He loves to shoot, and he just doesn't. He doesn't pass, and you know, maybe you control his minutes. Maybe you just ride him out, and when you're not counting on him for anything, if he's going well and he's hot, I don't know. I've seen too much in playoff moments where I'm just not sure that he's gonna how much he's gonna be able to help. But does he have the potential where if he just would fit in a little bit and pass the ball a little bit, there's no question that he can score. So Utah's got to give him the benefit of the doubt at this point, thinking that, hey, he comes into our system and we get him to change. Now, the likelihood of that happening, in my mind, is pretty low, but who knows? And obviously, they had pretty much soured on Exum and given up on him. So, yep. So from their perspective, you know, you get rid of Exum, who really probably wasn't in your plans. You were kind of down on him anyway. And then, like I said, I'm dubious of the value of those second-round picks. I don't know what they generate for you. Unless, you know, again, you can get lucky and take a flyer on somebody. But for the most part, a guy who's drafted in the second round isn't going to be a guy who's going to be impactful on your franchise. So who cares about those picks? And then you also saw that the Jazz waived Uncle Jeff Green, too.
Did you see that? No, they did not. I did not see that.
Yes. Yeah, so they waived Uncle Jeff. Nope.
Laker bound?
That's what I was hearing. So they waived him because they signed a guy from the G League. So Rajon Tucker out of the G League.
I got to imagine some team will pick up Jeff Green for sure, right?
I mean, I would think so. I mean, I would think some contender is going to talk themselves into that Jeff Green can help us, and he probably can from a standpoint of filling minutes, and he's a guy who's played in big games. I think it all goes back to the same thing that we said when Jeff Green was here. If you are reliant upon Jeff Green in order for you to win, then that's not a good position to be in. If Jeff Green is somebody that you have on your roster who in a pinch you can go to, and if he's playing well, maybe things work out, great. And if he's not playing well, it doesn't matter. Jeff Green's a guy you'd want to have on your roster. If I'm one of these teams that's trying to win a title this year and Jeff Green becomes available and I have a roster spot, I would be more than happy to put Jeff Green on my roster and say, all right, we've got this guy kind of in reserve if we need him. And I think he'll probably end up on one of the contending teams. You know, it could be in the East or the West, just depending on who has roster space and money and all that stuff available.
Yep. Definitely think he'll be somewhere. I don't know. I would think that the Lakers would be a destination for him if he wanted to go there, and if they wanted him. And I think, at this point, you can't rule out Toronto being a spot just because of all the injuries. Maybe they take a flyer on him and pull him in there.
It could be. I won't be surprised if he goes. Like I said, I see him signing with some contending team.
Yep. All right, anything else, Mike?
Nothing else that I can think of. Just looking forward to a nice couple days here with the holiday, Christmas Eve tomorrow, Christmas Day, being able to watch some of the NBA games. Looking forward, again, especially to the two games that we talked about that are kind of highlight the marquee, and just kind of relaxing and getting away from it all for a couple days and hanging out with
family. Look at this way, after Sunday, we don't have to watch any more Cleveland Browns football.
Yeah, that's we'll be on coach watch. See who the next buffoon is that they're going to bring in here to try to coach the team.
Oh, man, Urban Meyer, man, get ready. That's what the rumor is.
Well, at least Urban Meyer is. I mean, I know he hasn't coached in the NFL.
There's zero chance he's coming, by the way. But
hey, keep hope alive, man.
All right.
Let's wrap that up. All right. Thanks to everyone for listening. We appreciate it. Enjoy the Christmas Day games, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
As you've listened to the Hoopheads podcast, one common topic that continually comes up in our conversations is character. I'm fortunate to be associated with the Positive Coaching Alliance, a national nonprofit movement that provides valuable tools, training, and resources for coaches, athletes, parents, and administrators that is centered around sports and educational psychology and organizational behavior research. PCA combines this research with practical advice from a national advisory board of top pro and college athletes and coaches who utilize PCA principles at the highest levels of competition. Through a partnership with our local Cleveland chapter of the PCA, we are pleased to offer a discount code to allow you, our listeners, to take a PCA online course for just $20. To take advantage of this offer, visit the store on positivecoach.org and enter the discount code HOOPHEADS20. That's HOOPHEADS20 with two capital H's. Coaches, I hope you'll take advantage of this great offer from the Positive Coaching Alliance and help us continue to grow the game.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball. We'll be right back.